This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
To the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome in, everybody. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com. Sabres got a nice win yesterday. Jack Quinn finding a little bit of a groove here. Nice to see for him. UB Women, they're onto the Fab Four of the NIT after their comeback win against Rutgers. We will be talking to UB Women head coach Becky Burke in just about a half hour. In a few minutes, though, we'll first touch base with Sal Capaccio, as maybe that's the biggest news of the weekend. The NFL owners' meeting's going down in Florida. And really, Derek, the big thing I've seen right off the top with all of that is the tush push. Again, is sort of the headline for rules changes and such. I was hoping it was going to be more kickoff-related stuff. It seems to be there is really some growing sentiment. I saw Diane Orsini tweet this morning, too, of like their support to
it's
get it banned.
Suddenly becoming a bit more of a main character, especially within the owners' meetings. Because think about it. Any important thing that has happened throughout the offseason, any sort of meetings of sort where all the teams are congregating together, it's getting more volume.
Yep.
It's making more noise. And I think with the real momentum that it has, unlike in previous years, there's something interesting to it. And I think the biggest reason for more momentum is one of the teams that's the most successful with it has had some vocal opposition against it.
I saw this morning Sean McDermott's table was a popular congregating spot for a lot of media members.
As Jeremy was pointing out, if there's a face for this movement, it might be him.
Yeah.
Because you can go – like, it's one thing for – like, say, like, you're boxing someone and someone just kicks you in the shin. The Packers are the team saying, you can't kick me in the shins. And the Bills, meanwhile, are one of these teams kicking people in the shins, and they're like, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, we should not do that. I think what's fascinating
that's
to
the
me,
thing,
though,
is like,
has been the main thing that McDermott and some of the other coaches have mentioned is injury risk. And yet there is no finite data to this point
the
injury risk.
It's veiled. There's no way that it's the real reason. It's just the one that you could publicly say.
I think there is. I want
someone to just say, it looks like a garbage play. We should stop doing it.
I think it's 50-50.
That's the real reason.
I think it's 50-50.
Someone just does not, like, no one in an important position is willing to say it. It's not my opinion. I'm just saying what needs to be said by them. I want to hear it just so that I can be like, you're sticking with your convictions and I like it.
Small, like, I respect you for it. Be like, it's vile. I hate it. It looks gross.
It looks like not real football.
Let's get more, though, on the owners' meetings as WGR's coverage of the NFL owner meetings live from West Palm Beach, Florida with Sal Capaccio is brought to you by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. Sal, good morning, my friend. How are we doing?
Pretty good, guys. How are you? Good morning on a nice sunny day here. And what I've learned, but it's Palm Beach, not West Palm Beach. There is a difference between the two.
Okay.
But it is Palm Beach. But either way, either way it works, I don't care. It's nice and sunny. I'll call it West Palm Beach, which is what I've been doing all week.
What's sunny? What does that mean? I've got gray. Like, he said that, and I'm like, that's just mean.
Yeah.
That is mean. Yeah, I immediately pointed to myself, it was very rainy. Okay, yeah. I'll take that then.
It was very rainy yesterday, actually. It was overcast and rainy yesterday while we were here, and then today is nice, beautiful Florida sun.
All right, so Sal, right off there, you may have heard me and Derek talking about it. We'll get to the Christian Benford extension signing earlier this weekend, too, and some of the comments made about James Cook. But really, the tush push. It has kind of become the main talking point at the owners' meetings. And Sean McDermott, to Derek's point, maybe is the face of it because of how successful the Bills are with it. What have you been hearing?
There's a lot here, guys, because we know that this has been something heavily debated over the last couple of months, really going into last year after the Eagles started using it so much and being so good at it. The Bills have been very, very good at what's commonly known as the tush push, obviously. And it was proposed by the Green Bay Packers last month or a few weeks ago to ban the tush push. Now, some people think that's because Green Bay couldn't stop it or whatever. You know, I've heard people say, well, it's just petty from an organization that, you know, they're on the wrong end of it. But there is a segment of the league, coaches, GMs, owners, whoever, that believe that this is a play that should not be allowed, including Sean McDermott, who, ironically, his team is really, really good at it because they have Josh Allen. They've done a great job of it. And over the last few weeks, Sean has actually dug in harder and more on being against the play. Now, if it was to not be banned, the Bills would still use it because it's part of the rules. His reasoning, we just spoke to him. We talked to him last night and again this morning. His reasoning is health and safety. He just believes because of the way their bodies are and people are piling up and the way that bodies have to contort and all that, that there's a health and safety issue. Now, there is no data to back that up. And other people, reporters, have brought that up to McDermott. Well, there's no data showing that there's an injury risk, right? McDermott has his own, you know, ways of looking at it and his own data that he's looked at or whatever. I don't want to go into all that because obviously there's different people who do look at it different ways. It's super interesting to me. I asked him specifically, Sean, it's weird, and can you explain to people why your team is so good at it, but yet you're one of the people at the forefront of saying you don't want it? And his reasoning, I actually really respect it, is he's on the competition committee. And his job on the competition committee is not to do what's best for the Buffalo Bills, but to do what's best for the league, and that's why he views it this way.
I do respect that. And Sal, like, that's kind of where I'm at. And I won't speak for Derek here because we were just talking about kind of, you know, maybe what are some of the other reasons for other teams. For me, I know there's no concrete data to prove that injury risk goes up for the tush push, but I do remember, maybe it was the first or the second year the Eagles started doing it, Jason Kelce complained about it often and how much it beat up his bodies. Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about it during the combine when this kind of first popped up, Green Bay bringing it up, that we've mentioned quarterbacks a lot. I do wonder, though, with how valuable having any offensive lineman is, and you pay your guys quickly. There's usually not great offensive linemen available in free agency. I wonder how many teams are going, we can't risk our center getting hurt on a one-yard play where maybe we can do it any other, you know, variety of ways. Let's just get rid of that because our center's getting beat up, you know what. I wonder if maybe that's a big part of it. Quarterback, of course, maybe the main fixture. But I think center and their injury risk is probably high up there as well.
Okay, no doubt. That is right. It's a good point, but I'm going to extend it out. It's not just the center, guys. It's all the offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Look how the Chiefs defended the play by diving low at legs, tying everybody up. And can I offer you this? Defensive linemen, because of what they have to do to try and stop the play. So, and all the mass that's going at them as they work low and then get bent backward. I'm just presenting the other side here as McDermott's talking, right? Because I think it's a fascinating discussion. Part of it, too, is McDermott said this. And this part I agree with, which is it doesn't mean you can't just do a quarterback sneak. And teams have been very successful on quarterback sneaks. Tom Brady, guys, there was a stat one time where he was like 95 out of 100 on quarterback sneaks, or even more than that, over in the course of his career. You know, I mean, whatever numbers they were, incredibly successful. Josh Allen would be still very successful and was on quarterback sneaks without someone pushing him. It doesn't take away the quarterback sneak, but this particular play and the way that all that mass is going forward, that is one of the reasons why McDermott's also, you know, where he is, and other people, not just Sean McDermott. It's not just the center, although the center obviously takes a lot of the brunt. But let's remember the Bills, when they were unsuccessful, they didn't go over the center. They went to the left every time, right? Remember that. So how was that's the left guard. That's the left tackle. Deion Dawkins was doing an interview with Colin Cowherd the other day I listened to on the radio, and Deion was talking about the toll it takes on his body. He's a left tackle and how it's tough on him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing. And I do almost like that the league is being proactive to something. Maybe to take a positive spin on this, we're not waiting for a huge injury to happen. We're seeing what's going on. We're listening to our players, the beatings they're taking, and we want to get in front of it rather than react to potentially a massive knee injury. It doesn't have to be.
Well, can I just correct for 1 second? Remember, mm-hmm. It's not the league doing this. This is a proposal from a team.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Right. So it's not the league. The competition committee didn't say, hey, we need to look at this. A team is, but to your point of the league, there is enough support from people around the league and the competition committee to get to the point where we are today, and then it'll be voted on tomorrow. There was a report. There was an article written yesterday on ESPN that said that there was an animated discussion in a hallway between McDermott and Sean McVay and Howie Roseman. And my apologies, the young lady who wrote the article, she works for ESPN, I have to pull that up. I spoke with her, actually, and she was explaining to me what she saw in the hallway. And she said, animated, it wasn't in a bad way, but they were obviously, they were talking it, and you could see them very, lively talking. She said, animated was not, it wasn't mean. They weren't, like, going at each other, but it was definitely something they were all passionate about.
I have the article in front of me. It's Kalen Kaher. Of ESPN.
Kalen Kaher, yes, very good. I was just speaking with Kalen a little while ago, and she actually asked McDermott about it, and he pushed back on, well, it wasn't very animated. And I spoke with her about that exchange, and she said maybe she could use a different word, but she said, but it definitely was, several of the guys were talking quite a bit about it, pretty lively in the hallway.
And I think really the discussion is gaining more and more momentum because I think things came to a head in the NFC Championship game between Philadelphia and Washington where the Eagles suddenly just go, all right, if you're going to jump the snap, we're just going to not snap the football and get awarded a touchdown by penalty if you guys keep doing this. So it does look like things are coming to a head at this point about the style of the variant of this of the quarterback sneak, effectively.
We'll see where it goes, guys. I mean, the way that the rule is written, there was even a question of McDermott today about is it about the super specificity of it of immediately after the snap versus, and I think that there's a lot of things in the weeds are getting into on this, but we'll see where it goes. Tomorrow morning is the vote on that, as well as several other issues. McDermott's also not in favor of eliminating a first down, automatic first down for illegal contact or defensive holding. Brandon Bean is also not in favor of eliminating that. Brandon Bean said that he believes there are unintended consequences that go along with that, including maybe on a third down and long, a coach instructing his players to hold more, because it's not as penal. Neither of them are for the proposal also brought by Detroit to reseed the playoff teams based on wild card record. If a wild card winner has a better record than the division winner. Both McDermott and Bean kind of echoed the same sentiment, which is they believe that you should have a really big, you should have the reward of having a home playoff game if you win your division.
Yeah, and I mean, those two have been vocal about that for years, about first win the division, assure yourself a home playoff game. I'm not too surprised by that. On the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio from Palm Beach, Florida, for the NFL owners' meetings. Sal, we also got news of another Bills extension this weekend. Christian Benford does get a 4-year, $76 million deal. Personally, for me, it did feel like maybe he was going to go on the back burner, that maybe they had missed their window. I was a little surprised to see it pop up, but it's another extension. It's been a busy offseason for the Bills on that front.
Yeah, for sure. So I also agree that I thought maybe they wouldn't be able to get anything done because they had the other three done, and it's really tough to kind of keep doing that with everybody, and where's the money, how much to go around. But you can always play with numbers, obviously, and do it. And the other thing is McDermott's always so good at just not revealing anything about this stuff, keeping things close to the vest. And we didn't know anything about Christian Benford until it came down. And he gets what I think is a really team-friendly deal. He is the 13th highest-paid corner, and I don't think anybody would put him outside the top 12 corners in the NFL. So, based on some of the things we've seen, some of the numbers that are out there, I think he is very deserving of being and getting that kind of money. But this is a deal that's very interesting, which is, because I say it, another deal that's a 4-year extension for a guy that has 1 year remaining. Now, let's count the guys who've done that. Now, I've had 6 extensions this offseason. Josh Allen and Reed Ferguson are 2 of them. The other 4 are all guys who are entering the final year of their deals. Khalil Shakir, Terrell Bernard, Greg Rousseau, and now Christian Benford. And what's interesting about all four of them, it's 4 years added on top of the final year. So they're all now locked up for 5 years, and they all end at the same time. Guys, this is not a coincidence. The Bills would not say this. I don't think Brandon Bean would ever say this. I don't think Sean McDermott would ever say it. I will say it. The Bills are clearly trying to win a Super Bowl over the next 5 years. That's where they believe Josh Allen's window is to be elite and be great and in his prime to win a Super Bowl. And that's why they're making these deals expire when they are.
Sal, that's a really good observation that I like to see there. But also, just as importantly, I think that outside of Bernard, you were looking at really a discount on the other three deals there with Shakir, Rousseau, and with especially with Bernard, on how they managed to be below market value for what they were playing up to.
If you guys want to know, Matt Bove and I just did a Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. So he said this. I don't want to steal his point. It's a great point. If you guys want to know what true value Josh Allen brings to an organization, it's not just being the league MVP and being great. It's because you can do this, which is get people to sign here and stay here for less money than maybe they'd get on the open market. I mean, you can go, if you're Brandon Bean, you go to Khalil Shakir and go, how do you like playing with Josh Allen? Oh, yeah, I love it, right? You can go to Greg Rousseau. Hey, we got Josh Allen. Look around the league. You know, we can have a chance to win here for the next 5 years. Absolutely. Christian Benford, Terrell Bernard, same thing. The greatness of having a guy like Josh Allen is it's a gift that keeps on giving around your organization, because it's not just how great of a player he is. It's that you can now sign players, bring them in because they want to play for you, and you can retain your players probably at a lesser rate because they don't want to go somewhere else and risk not being involved with chasing a Lombardi every year.
Mm-hmm. It is the bonus of being a good to great team in the NFL. Sal, though, one player not given an extension, perhaps yet, maybe never, is James Cook. I know his name came up a lot yesterday when Bean and McDermott were speaking with you guys.
Yeah, I think this might be the story of the week for me here, which is Brandon Bean saying straight out that he does not expect a contract extension for James Cook, quote, anytime soon, end quote. He said they are now focused on the draft, focused on the cap for 2025, and the reasoning is because he said, look, you know, at some point you have to move on, but he gave a timeline of how things have developed. You go back a couple of months ago, he said in the offseason they did have discussions with James' representatives. And or whatever, over the last couple months at some point. When it became clear that they were not able to get a deal done, they basically then turned their attention to the players who they believe they could get a deal done. And we've seen that with four of them, because James Cook is the last one remaining. James Cook, as we know, has been very public and vocal about the fact that he wants $15 million a year. That's what he's put out there. That's the number he's put out there. He has done that. Brandon Bean has said at the Combine, they like to keep things in-house, but James is a grown man. He can handle business any way he wants. This is not a James Cook personal issue. He once again reiterated how much he loves James Cook, loves Jimbo, wants to have Jimbo here, loves him as part of the offense. He also said just because there's no deal done now doesn't mean it can't get done next year, which is interesting because at the Combine he said just because it's not done now doesn't mean it can't be done, you know, a week from now, a couple months from now. This time he said it means it doesn't mean it can't be done next year. I think this is it, guys. James Cook is going to go into the final year of his contract, and we'll see where it goes. I want everybody to remember, though, the Bills do have leverage at the end of next year because they have the franchise tag or transition tag. If James Cook has another great year and the Bills say, we're going to do whatever we can to not lose him, but we still don't want to pay him that money, they could franchise tag him. And, oh, by the way, the franchise tag this year was only $13 million for a running back, which is less than what he's asking for.
And that might be something that the Bills have looked at where they're like, franchise tag, we'll deal with it. I also, Sal, I look at it too. They've already drafted, they've continued to do what they do with the running back position these last few years, which is they go back into drafts maybe a year or two after drafting somebody, they get another guy. They don't necessarily spend high draft capital, James Cook being the outlier there, second round pick, but they did go and get Ray Davis. They did sign back Ty Johnson. I don't think it'll happen, but let's say, you know, draft weekend on that Saturday, a fourth round pick, they take a running back. I mean, what's the conversations we're having? I don't think the room can really sustain another one, especially a draft pick, but I don't want to say I can't totally see it with how deep this running back class is, or at least it's perceived to be.
No, I understand that, and if they were to draft one, we would have that conversation. But I want to point out to everybody, right now, they have five running backs on the roster. Five. That's not including Reggie Gilliam, the fullback. So five running backs, and all five, ironically, are exactly the same five. And only five they brought to camp last year. James Cook, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis, Frank Gore Jr., and Darrington Evans, who was on the roster last year, and then he is again right now. I think it would be very crowded, but you never rule it out. If they really feel this is going to go south with James Cook, they might want to get ahead of it. But again, they have James Cook for another year.
Yeah.
They don't even have to address this until next year if they don't want to in some capacity. The nuclear option is, okay, we got to blow it up. We got to get rid of James Cook. We got to do something. That could lead you down a certain path. But in the meantime, you're like, hey, if he's going to walk next year, then we'll use him up this year. And I just think it's a discussion that, yes, it's very, very interesting. And, yes, it's very notable what Brandon Bean said. But the Bills still have control here over what happens with James Cook. Now, if he decides to miss OTAs and minicamp, great. That players have done that. If all of a sudden he decides to miss training camp, it's $40,000 a day. And from what I understand, reading through, because he's on a rookie contract, that could actually be rescinded once he came back. So that is a play that James Cook has. But we don't want to. The Bills don't want to see that get ugly. I don't think fans want to see that get ugly. We don't want to see James Cook and the Bills being at odds over this. I think if you're a Bills fan and want to get this thing eventually resolved. The thing they haven't done at running back, guys, they have drafted guys in the second round, James Cook. They have drafted guys in the third round. Devin Singletary, I think was Devin a third or maybe a fourth. Zach Moss, right? The one thing they have not done, they have not given a contract extension to a running back after his rookie deal.
And I think
they haven't done it.
I think you can argue, though, too, Sal, like Cook is maybe the first guy that you can have that conversation about, that maybe it is like it's a tougher sell where previously it would have been maybe easier to let go of these guys. 16 touchdowns and, seemingly getting better in terms of his yards per carry every year. I can understand maybe if the Bills are having a hard time either moving on from or if they want to pay for him because they haven't up
to
this point.
This is a great point you're bringing up because I think, Zach, when I'm on, when you're on, when Derek's on, when Jeremy and Joe and Chopin the Bulldog and people are calling and we get all these tweets, I think what's happened with this conversation for a lot of people is they've kind of had to separate it between they either want him or they don't. That's not what the Bills want. James Cook. I want to tell you right now, the Bills want to re-sign James Cook. They want James Cook in a Buffalo Bills uniform. The only question is value. That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
This is not they just want to get rid of him. That is not what's happening here. So when you see, he's not going to get a contract extension, that's not code for we really don't like James Cook and we're going to move on from him. No. It's the opposite. They want James Cook, but the Bills have a value on James Cook, and James Cook has a value on himself, and he's earned that right, and the Bills have earned that right. So they have to come to some sort of resolution in one way or the other, or maybe he's playing for another team in 2026. But this is not a case. I think it becomes a case of black and white with a lot of people, which is it's either one way or the other. They want him or they don't. That's not the case. The Bills want James Cook. It's the question of how much the value is for James Cook.
I wouldn't even say necessarily the value, Sal. I might just say, can we afford him or not? And that's more of a black and white at that point based on the value, which has the gray area. So it is more intricate, but I do think it's more of, are we able to afford him based on the value?
Maybe a little bit, sure. Of course, you're always going to make concessions. Yeah, I agree with that. You have to make concessions somewhere, but the Bills will have a certain value where they believe if James Cook's willing to sign, I think that they would do whatever they should to make that work, if that makes sense, right? You definitely want to make sure you can't sign everybody. Everybody says you can't re-sign everybody, no doubt about it. And you have to have the money. And maybe he's squeezing himself out because they're already giving these extensions out, Derek, to your point, right? But I think overall, it's if James Cook, I don't know what the Bills value James Cook at. Let's just say it's $10 million. If James Cook went to them tomorrow and said, all right, I'll sign for $10 million, I think they would find the money some way, right? I think they would work to find the money to make that happen. It's going to be really interesting to see how this develops.
Sal, last thing, not football related, baseball. Torpedo bats, Yankees, a lot of home runs. How do you feel?
I feel like I do about the tush push, which is, all right, you ready? This is either going to be where everyone does it or it's going to get banned.
It's exactly
the torpedo
what
bats.
I'm thinking. Me and my brother had the exact same conversation. We're like, by the end of April,
I think it's fascinating.
May, people are going to be using the bats or they're gone.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, before I go, though, guys, I know we got a couple minutes here. If you don't mind, I'd like to direct everybody to WGR550.com. I had a really in-depth one-on-one interview with Bills and Sabres COO Pete Guelli, and we touched on a lot of topics. And if I could just have a couple minutes here to kind of just go over a couple things that he says, I think it's very important to our listeners. First of all, PSL sales, he said 70% of the lower bowl is sold. All the premium seats are sold out. The suites are basically sold out, and they're very on track with their pacing to what they believe will be a sold out, Highmark Stadium when it opens in 2026. That being said, it won't just be the Bills opening up Highmark Stadium in 2026. He said that next summer they're looking at what they can do to have something before that because they don't just want to have a you know, go in cold with the Bills. So that sparked a lot of people wondering what kind of concert could they bring in? Could it be lacrosse? Could it be soccer? Those are all things on the table, by the way, that he said. No doubt about that. So that's really interesting. The last piece of steel is going in on April 4th, which, by the way, is my birthday. So let's go down and celebrate my birthday and the last piece of steel going in on the stadium. So there's going to be like 2,000 people at what I'm going to call my birthday party down there, right? Whatever it is, thousands of people. But you get the point. It's going to be a good day. It's the last piece of steel. And then from there, they'll do all the things that they needed inside the stadium and the bowl and all that kind of stuff going forward. We also know the Bills are very much in contact with both the NFL and the NHL to bring the NFL draft to Buffalo, which Pete Guelli said he believes is happening. He thinks 2029 is pretty realistic. Don't rule out 2028, but they're very aware the Bills want it. The Bills are sending a contingent to Green Bay to see how they do it this year. So I would expect an NFL draft to be in Buffalo in 2028 or more likely 2029. And either a Winter Classic or Stadium Series game, which is now part of the outdoor series they do, not just the Winter Classic. Yes, the 20th anniversary is coming up, which would fit perfect for the Bills to host that and the Sabres to play in that stadium. But because of the Bills' schedule and not knowing that, it could just be a Stadium Series game. That being said, arena downtown, that's also going to be something that they're focusing on and looking at, which is Pete Guelli is very passionate about the development of the downtown area and the fact that KeyBank Center is a destination for people to go and how, yes, the Sabres are the main tenant and the main draw, but there's the Bandits, obviously. There's college basketball, which is coming next year for the NCAA tournament, the first two rounds. I thought his quote was very interesting. He said, we want Buffalo to be a college basketball destination. You'll love that, Zach. Mm-hmm. He said they've talked with people at the national level. They talk with all the local teams. They really want to enhance the college basketball experience downtown. And they're also, so around that area and in the arena, they're also talking about more enhancements. But, you know, he wouldn't get into what they have planned right now. Finally, I know a big buzz for everybody is third jerseys, right? Alternate uniforms, helmets, all those things people love to talk about. Look, I get it. I got a lot of people upset yesterday when I tweeted out, don't expect anything this year. They're going to be looking at more like combination stuff this year. Then next year when the new stadium opens, that's when they have some things planned for the uniforms. But I understand Pete Guelli's point here, which is this year is really going to be a lot of the focus on the old stadium, the current stadium, the memories in that stadium, 50-plus years, all the different ways they want to celebrate that stadium. That's where their focus is now. And they might do some things with throwbacks or Standing Buffalo this year. We'll see. But anything really radical or changes in some sort, probably waiting till next year when the new stadium opens.
All right, Sal, thank you so much. We got to run. We'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
That was Sal Capaccio live from Palm Beach, Florida for the NFL Owners Meeting and WGR's coverage of the NFL Owners Meeting with Sal Capaccio. It was brought to you by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. We got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, UB Women's Head Coach for Basketball, Becky Burke, joins the show as the women's team is on to the Fab Four in the women's NIT. We'll get her thoughts on that historic accomplishment for the program after a quick time out. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you will find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. A lot of interesting pieces there from Sal Capaccio, who is covering the NFL owners meetings down in Palm Beach, Florida. Before we get to any of that, though, UB women head coach Becky Burke has been on the show a number of times this season. They've had a wonderful season, 20-plus wins this year. They're in the NIT. They're still in the NIT following their win against Rutgers yesterday at home, 71-64. And with that, we go to the Western Hotline as head coach Becky Burke joins the show. Coach, congratulations on the continued run this season.
Thank you. It's been really exciting, and we're happy to keep it going.
And on that, I mean, you've had some exciting games. The first one against UMass goes to overtime. You guys were down yesterday at half. It's been a wild ride. Those two games, by the way, as well, were at home, and now you guys are in the Fab Four. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been really, really just cool to see our team just fight and battle and play some different teams from some different conferences and ultimately be 3-0 so far in this tournament. So, yeah, it's been really fun and exciting. And obviously the city and our fan base have been excited with us. So it's been awesome.
So it is the NIT. It's the longest postseason run the UB women's program has had, I believe, since 2018 when they went to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. Was there at any point with this group that you guys have a little bit of bitterness of not making the NCAA tournament? It was such a successful regular season. Again, 20-plus wins, and you guys had historic beginnings to that season. Or was this just right away, no, let's go win this. Let's go try to get a championship here in Buffalo?
Yeah, I wouldn't say bitterness, obviously disappointment. You want to play in the NCAA tournament. That's your goal every year. And, you know, that's priority number one, is to make sure you put yourself in a position to play in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, if you don't get into that, there's so much good basketball still to be played, including the WNIT. And so, you know, I think you could argue it's a WNIT championship or a first round exit in the NCAA tournament. You know, what would you rather have? I think people would probably be split on that. So it's a big deal that we're in the Fab Four of this tournament, and something that we're thankful for and appreciative of, and no letdown once this tournament started. It was full speed ahead. Like, let's try to still go win a championship, and hopefully here in about a week we can say we did that.
Here's to hoping, absolutely, Coach. And also, being able to play in front of the home crowd yesterday and having that passion there, what was the emotions like for the team as you guys had to scrape back a little bit and then dominate in the fourth quarter?
Our fans and the home court environment yesterday was absolutely nuts. And it's been like that all year for us. It's our support this year. And, you know, obviously our winning ways these last couple years have made people come out and be excited about our team. And yesterday it was truly the difference. You know, even in our game against UMass when we were able to host, it was the difference. And the city of Buffalo has shown up for us, and we're so appreciative of that. But the fan support has been a huge factor. And I think you could ask the visiting teams and you could ask our team in terms of just how much it's meant to us. So it's been incredible. We're so thankful. We're so appreciative. And hopefully another opportunity to host another game this week is the news that we get. And that's what we're hoping for, because it does make such a big difference.
That was going to be one of my questions, Coach, as well. It's either Purdue Fort Wayne or Cleveland State. I was wondering if there was still a chance we get another game at Alumni Arena. I wanted to go yesterday. I saw head coach of the football team, Pete Lembo, went. And I'm like, I should have went. I knew I should have gone. My afternoon had opened up and I didn't. And that's my bad. It's totally, Derek's holding up his hand.
I am at fault for this.
It is his
fault. We had some plans, so I'm at fault. So I do apologize for both of us here.
No worries. And if we get the host, you can make it up by coming to the next one. So there is definitely a chance we get to host. And so if we do, hopefully we can break the other night's record of attendance and keep pushing forward in this tournament, because with the help from you guys and everybody in the community who's been so great.
And so on tonight, I mean, when it comes to these matchups, especially these basketball tournaments, it is between Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Cleveland State. Do you and your coaching staff, I'm not going to, you know, ask if you guys have any rooting interest, but are you guys kind of locked in all together watching the game at 7, or is it more you wait to see who wins and then you go to the tape?
No, we were prepping for both ways, you know, so whoever wins, we will be fully prepared for, and then we'll just clean up that last game and make sure we're ready for it. So, we're ready for whoever wins. Both assistants are already working on their scouts and hopefully finishing those up today. And so we're prepared nonetheless.
And then, Coach, one last thing for me, just on this run, at what point did it stop kind of just being like it's postseason basketball, and does it kind of turn the page to let's go win a championship here, let's go hang a banner, let's bring a trophy into Alumni Arena? Because the Fab Four, of course, but, you know, whenever I listen to college basketball, or it's always based off of Final Four appearances, right? And this is in that same vein. At this point, does it become, you know, it's not just nice to be here, let's go win this thing?
Oh, 100%. I think, you know, that first game, you're like, okay, let's see what we can do in this tournament. Let's see if we can win the first one. You know, you win the second one, now you can start to smell it. You win the Elite Eight game, now you're like, okay, championship is within our reach. And that's what we've talked about. And you know, winning yesterday, it's just like, you don't come this far to come this far. So I think we're at the point now for sure, being one of the final four teams left, that we believe we can win a championship, and just makes them more excited to come to practice every day, because it's been a long season. You know, it's been a really, really long season. And, you know, just to keep them focused, I think that's really, really cool that they could win a championship.
Not just win a championship. One of the fascinations with college athletics is there are not many teams that get to go out on a win. And being in the NIT here, it gives you an opportunity to go out on top and be able to go out with a win. What would that be able to feel like, having something genuinely rare within college athletics?
It would be incredible. I think this is still a really prestigious tournament and still really, really good for our program and our university. And we don't do anything not to win. So no matter what tournament we would be in, we'd be excited to have an opportunity to win a championship and something that these players can say they did. And nobody can take that from them. And I think that's the important thing.
Coach, actually, I lied. I do have one other thing that I want to bring up because I'm a stickler for free throws. This is coming from somebody that cannot shoot a basketball. So, like, there is something there. But I am always impressed when I see a team stat of like above 85% shooting free throws. You guys were 90% yesterday, scoring 29 in the fourth quarter. The closing speed that team showed yesterday, I think, is so, so impressive.
Yeah, no, we stepped up and knocked them down when we needed to. And we live at the free throw line. So if we don't knock those down, those are points we're giving away. And we made sure that we stepped up. We've really been shooting a ton of free throws this week, knowing that we could be aggressive against Rutgers. And so I'm happy that it showed on the stat sheet for us.
Absolutely. Coach, good luck the rest of the way. We'll be watching to see who wins tonight, Purdue, Fort Wayne, Cleveland State, to see if we can have another game at Alumni Arena. But even if we don't, you guys are in the Fab Four. It's unbelievable. Congratulations on this run.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys.
That was UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke there on the West Her Hotline. And speaking of the free throw line and kind of living and dying by that, if anyone watched the men's tournament, Florida, Texas Tech, mm-hmm. Florida wins that game 84-79, partially because Texas Tech threw it away by not making the free throws. Oh. They ultimately go from the line 7 of 13, good for 53.8%. Florida, 25-27, 92.6%. And we mentioned it there. UB, the best quarter of basketball point-wise was 29 points, and they were doing a lot of that, as Coach Burke said, from the free throw line. That shows a good team that can close out games.
You're drawing a chance to get points off of tough D, mm-hmm. maybe too tough of D, maybe sometimes not.
Yeah.
Either way, if you're hitting 90% of your free throws, that's
a boon games.
For success.
Tie
you win games.
Yeah.
It can cost you, because, ready? They're called free throws. You get them uncontested for free. You had to earn them, so I don't know why they're called free throws. You did have to earn them, but they're still there.
They're points
for you to just acquire.
There's nothing that kills me more watching basketball. I don't watch a ton of NBA until the playoffs. I watch a lot of college basketball than having a guard walk up to the free throw line and I see their free throw percentage is like in the 70s. I'm like, what are you doing? Come on, man. Like, you're not Shaq. That's one thing. I get it. 7 foot tall guy. I get it. Whatever. 6'1", you got to hit those. And UB did it at a really good pop. On the NCAA tournament, though, we spoke about the men's thing. I do want to bring this up. All 4-1 seeds to the Final Four. Just the second time ever since we've gotten to this modern bracket. I believe 84, 85. And it's been chalky. It's Sal mentioned it. I'm a huge college basketball junkie. I love good basketball. I like when the good teams actually do have great seasons.
But this
I
is too much that. One seeds for you?
This is too much one seeds for me, yeah. Because I thought Auburn was playing bad at the end of the year. They lost three of their last four. Mm-hmm. They didn't look particularly good, and then they went on a run. Duke is considered almost historically great, depending on who you ask. Houston has been here forever,
and then Florida's awesome. There's a narrative that is forming, and we do have to be careful about this, of like, is NIL and the transfer portal mm-hmm. killing college basketball? The problem with that narrative is this is the first time this happened since, what, 2008?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
So I pointed out how 07 was one of the most boring tournaments. When it came to it was too chalky,
mm-hmm.
and 08 did the same thing. I don't think there was any problems with complaining about it back then. So it has to be a trend. It has to stick around in order for there to be a real problem with NIL and transfer portal for that to be an issue.
Yeah.
The other thing is that in the women's tournament for the NCAA, same thing has happened. Not the same exact thing, but like ones, twos, and there's this 1-3 seed in there. So
I also would like to point out that when we did have a really aggressively different seeded Final Four, it wasn't watched as much.
Yeah.
Florida Atlantic, San Diego State, Miami, and UConn from 2 years ago.
I will say personally, like, I love when there's chaos thrown into a bracket and mm-hmm. even deep into it. Those are the things that I love watching for in the tournaments, the things that you say that people don't. I'm watching for that. Yeah. I want to see a Loyola Chicago hanging around in the Final Four. I want to see Butler be introduced as a solid mid-major school that establishes a presence within the Elite Eight on a consistent basis. I want to see teams like that, that we don't know the names of, hanging around the Elite Eight, threatening for the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the NIT, the women's NIT, we looked at this morning. There are not a lot of UB in this, let alone a Purdue, Fort Wayne, and Cleveland State.
Mm-hmm.
So that means one of those two teams is going to make a finals appearance in the women's NIT.
Yeah,
and there's not a lot of those in the history either. I love the chaos. I love that kind of an underdog story. And just to tie it back in to the coach here and talking with her, I hope that it's UB that ends up playing for a championship, because you don't see many of those names hanging around at the end of it all.
No, and it's why I brought up to the hanging a banner, having a championship. I think that'd be huge. I think that would be massive. I think of programs like St. Bonaventure, who they made the Final Four in 1970 before the tournament kind of became the tournament. They weren't even seeding teams at that point yet, or to the modern sense that we see it. But that's still a banner you see in there, and I think it'd be the same thing for the women's program, who has had deep runs in the NCAA tournament, have done really well with the transition from Felicia Legat-Jack to, of course, Coach Becky Burke. And then and I loved your point too of not many teams, especially in college basketball. College football, you can win a bowl game and feel good.
College basketball, you can, like, the UB football team wins in the Bahamas, by the way.
Yeah, great.
I don't know if there's a better way to cap off your season other than being the national champion than that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like in college basketball, very rarely do you get teams that get to land on their feet at the end of it, brush themselves off, and say, we won our last game.
Yeah.
It is not a common thing.
Because even these 16 seeds that go out, win their conference tournament, maybe even win a first four game, and you're like, oh, this is great. Then they get blown out by a one seed. And that's the closing note on your season. Like, that can suck at times.
It's going to suck at times. Mm-hmm. There's accomplishments along the way, and you end up proud looking back. But if you play a game, if you have any sort of competitive juices in your DNA, and those athletes do, your last game played, possibly even for a senior ever, will be defeat. And that will hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We will know who UB faces later tonight. Again, Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Cleveland State. They play at 7 p.m. And I believe then that game, the Fab Four game, will be on Wednesday. Location yet to be determined. We are open up now the rest of the way. Do want to jump into some of the stuff Sal was talking about at the owners' meetings. A lot, too, on James Cook. I find the idea of franchise tag even being brought up in a bean management with the Bills is super fascinating. We'll jump in on that. But if you want to join the conversation, 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Got some kind of cool, like, college football news. If you don't know, Andrew Luck is the general manager of Stanford football. Yes, the former Colts quarterback. After retiring, he's now gotten back into the administration side of it.
More importantly, the former Stanford quarterback.
Yes, the former Stanford quarterback. They fired their head coach, Troy Taylor, not that long ago, which is very late in the cycle. We're into spring ball and stuff like that. Like, it's not a good thing. So to retroactive that and kind of make up for it and kind of, you know, give themselves a safety blanket, we have interim coaches for a season now, as former NFL head coach, former Bills quarterback Frank Reich has signed a one-year deal on an interim basis to be the Stanford Cardinals head coach.
How do you got to feel if you're one of the students? Transfer
weird.
Portal closed.
Weird.
Coach is fired. Frank Reich's your coach now for a year. Have fun.
I mean, there is a part of, though, it's like, all right, he was an NFL coach. It wasn't terrible. I know a lot of people liked him a lot and didn't think he got a fair shake. I get it. Especially Carolina. But I think this is also like the new landscape where it's like NIL is going to kind of help you. It is going to allow you to maybe do something like this.
It's also Stanford, though.
It is Stanford.
It's not what I would call an NIL-rich idea yet.
Yeah, yes, because I know that's been a big thing with Andrew Luck, is wanting to really do what Notre Dame does, which is we have great alumni, and our NIL, while yes, it's going to be money, it's going to be more connections.
Yes.
And that's Notre Dame's big thing. They have the money, of course, but it's also we have the alumni base that when you get out of here, let's say your football career, basketball career, whatever, doesn't go the way you want, we've got the connections.
We've at least got the people to help you.
Yeah, and that seems to be what Notre Dame's building. I think it's what Stanford wants to build as well.
Yes.
But and kind of cool to see Frank Reich back in like the head coaching ranks.
Yeah. A general manager, still a weird concept, but hey, you know what? Here we go.
I'm all for it. It used to just be the main booster. Now it's a former quarterback that went number one overall and retired suddenly. I'll never forget that. I was by a campfire with a bunch of friends, and all of our phones started going off, and we're like, we're not getting punked, right? Andrew Luck's really retiring the season after having his career best year, and the Colts finally seem to get it right. Absolutely insane. 803-0550, the number to call. We already mentioned we want to get into some stuff from the NFL owners meeting, namely James Cook. Also want to touch on the Sabres as well. 8 goals yesterday. Jack Quinn, maybe he's finding himself a little bit. We know Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen not really finding himself much. We'll talk on a lot of that stuff here in hour number 2 after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Caps still with the puck. Chychrun, new stick and all. Lost the puck and it's stolen, and it's a breakaway attempt here for Buffalo. Quinn with the goal on a clear-cut breakaway. End-to-end pretty much for Quinn, and the Sabres score their 6th of the game with 14:08 to go in the third period.
Jack Quinn's goal yesterday, part of a 3-point night for him. Sabres get an 8-5 win over the Washington Capitals.
4-point night.
Yesterday?
Yeah, he's had 2 4-point nights.
I have a 3 points.
Then someone's telling me something wrong.
Having a goal, 2 assists.
Yeah, I'm looking at Joshua now.
I'm sorry, I must have miscounted.
1 + 2 = 3.
Listen, I didn't get into radio to do math.
That's fair, actually. I can't fault that one. I can't fault that one.
How many times did I think I was going to have to do math today?
More than once, by the way. That's we're adding to the total.
Great weekend for him, though. 6 total points in 2 games.
Yes.
2 goals against Philadelphia, 1 against Washington. Nice breakaway. That's one of my biggest issues with the Sabres. Every breakaway feels like it's going to save it.
It was such a convincing shot, too, though. Like, you see him rip the dang thing, and he's just like, yep, I scored.
Up to 14 goals this year, 34 points. Still not a great year, or even good year for him by any means. But we were talking in the break there. They've got 9 games left. If he, you know, gives you a 16-goal year with how bad it's been for him at times,
you suddenly look back and go, man, this season really went off the rails. Even Jack Quinn scored 16 goals.
And especially because it'll happen at this end of the year juncture where it's like, okay, he came around. They got there. This is good. One guy that's not coming around. The Sabres did play a back-to-back. They're going to do that a lot here to end the
year. They're going to be basically alternating these goalies every other game here, because they'll play Ottawa on Tuesday. They'll have 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, where there's nothing going on games-wise. But then they are they're every other day at best, including back-to-back games over the weekend.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, home against the Lightning, and then Sunday, home against the Bruins.
And it is very much, it's the 1st, then you got the break to the 6th, then 8th, 10th, 12th, 13th, 15th, 17th. It is every other day.
Yeah.
Except for then there's a Saturday, Sunday.
So, going back to this weekend, Saturday, they lost 7-4 to Philadelphia.
Both of those weekends, it's ridiculous that they're back-to-backs.
Yeah, well, they got to make up the games eventually.
But that's 4 straight weekends of back-to-backs.
Yeah, they got to make up these games eventually. It's brutal.
It's just weird.
So, Saturday, they lose 7-4 to Philadelphia. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, let them all in. We talked about it a lot last week of, like, where do you go with him? What goaltending and special teams.
And I went
has
into
clearly the, sunk your season.
And I went into goaltenders are weird. They are fickle. It is sometimes, I dare even say evil. Sorry. No offense.
There we go.
But, because we have a pair of goalies in this building, in Josh and Owen. So
wait a minute. Don't put me in the same conversation as him. He's up here and I'm down here.
Hey, quality of goalies still means you're a goalie.
I guess that's fair.
You have the equipment.
All right.
You've got a little bit of evil in you, and that's okay. That's okay. It's also one of the hardest positions to predict. By the way, if you want an indicator of how the weekends are going to go, they're going to lose the Saturday game and win the Sunday games. And the opponents kind of make sense for it.
Mm-hmm.
The Saturday is Tampa Bay and Florida. The Sundays are Boston and then at Tampa Bay. And they've also lost the Saturday games for each of these last weekends and won the Sunday games. So if you do that to end the rest of the year, I'm just not talking about the Sabres with a game day going on because it's not working for me on my Sports Talk Saturdays.
It's working terribly for you.
Yeah.
I do want to say
But to go back to Luukkonen.
Yeah, real quick, I want to say this on him. We're at the end of March. Tomorrow's April 1st.
Correct.
He's let up 5-plus goals 4 times this month.
It's not been good. And ever since they came back from the Four Nations tournament, he has been bad. Mm-hmm. That is objectively the right way to say it. I know we've got a lot of UPL stands, a lot of people that love UPL. The personality that he brings to a locker room seems a little more on the wholesome angle. It's not been good enough this year.
Nope.
And especially after the tournament. There were times at the beginning of the year that UPL was winning you games, legitimately keeping you in games. Now, you look at why the Sabres have a bottom 10 penalty kill and go, goaltending is one of the biggest reasons why.
That's part of it.
Your best defender on the penalty kill has to be your goaltender. And oftentimes with the Sabres, it is not.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when Luukkonen has been in shorthanded, it's been a disaster at times. They are not good enough defensively, so I know this is not a strictly UPL thing. I do think that they need to get rid of the defensive assistant in Marty Wilford. It's that players are stagnating in their development at this point. I'm done.
Yeah.
You need someone else in there because it's not whoever's in there right now is not working. I need my special teams changed up. That is something that has been said for years now.
Yeah, we're at 2 years though now where it's been actively harmful.
It's harmful. The special teams have sunken 2 of your seasons. As a matter of fact, when you got 1 point out of the playoffs a couple of years ago, your power play was a good reason as to why you were successful, but then it started a massive decline in the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You need to change those tactics. You need to add another top 4 option. If I say the words Matias Samuelsson to someone on the street, I can't properly quote back the answers that get said.
It gets hostile.
Yeah, no, not just hostile. It would get us fined.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so.
Whether or not rightfully so with the word choices is one thing. It's that he has not been good enough and signed a bloated extension.
Mm-hmm.
And that extension now looks like a blight upon their cap. You cannot go back into this next season running it back with the same decor and expect for whoever is in net, be it Luukkonen, say Reimer comes back, or Levi takes that next step in his development. You cannot run back the same defensive core. Cannot. It is impossible to sell that, not just to the fans or the media. That's hard to sell back on your own team for the players in net. Has Rasmus Dahlin improved immensely as a defender? Yes. Is he the only one that I truly trust on a night-in, night-out basis? Also, yes. Owen Power does need to find a little bit more of his defensive game. He's always going to be a guy that makes great plays for you offensively. That is his style. It's always been since you drafted him from Michigan. He does need to find a little bit more of that defensive intelligence, and that's why I think that you need to shake up the coaching as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to add another player to the top 4. Give Power someone that he can consistently skate with. And, hell, give Matias Samuelsson a break from the top 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, it's hurting him. He's shown he's not that guy. Maybe he plays better if you put him on the bottom pair. But you cannot go back in there next year with effectively the same defensive core. You can't. It's not feasible. And in goal, you cannot run back the same plan of just, hey, maybe UPL or Levi is the breakout again. You have to have a veteran goaltender in there. Because James Reimer has proven to you he can do at least just enough for you.
Would that be plan A, though? I think at this
plan
point,
plan A is get a veteran goaltender in which one of you two kids figures this out
yeah.
in training camp We'll deal with the ramifications if UPL's the odd man out of this. But we cannot have the same plan for a third year in a row.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is plan A then James Reimer, who has played well-ish?
Plan A is veteran goaltender. It is not exclusively James Reimer.
But is a veteran goaltender with one of the young guys, I think we are...
A veteran goaltender we are leaning with starting towards Levi experience, yes.
UPL at this point has given you half a season of good play.
And the thing is that if there is something to that, maybe it's the trade market. And maybe UPL is the player that goes off in return, and you get a goaltender back and a player or a pick because of UPL's youth.
Mm-hmm. Is that maybe where you pair him with your first-round pick this year?
You actually go get a guy?
Noah Ausland to make the trade?
No.
No, I'm not saying all three.
No, I'm saying...
Just no.
Give up any notions of trying to trade Noah Ausland, please.
Jack Quinn. Do you pair those guys together or the pick together?
If he ends on a heater, that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that UPL's value to get a veteran goaltender, a 1B sorts, is not a bad idea. Because at some point, it is not feasible to have these two goaltenders, these two younger goaltenders, vying for the same thing. And kind of like the wild card two in the Eastern Conference, nobody seems to truly grab it.
No, the teams at the bottom of the playoff run in the East are terrible. All of them are. They're all bad.
But it's kind of, and I'm saying that it's not necessarily that these players are terrible. It's that neither of them has grabbed the situation either.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You thought it was going to be Levi first. At the end of the season, he actually played really well. He had good numbers for it. Then UPL takes over the crease, and he's the one that seems to claim it. But then he takes a step back. You cannot go into it with another year of this is the plan, because it should not be.
It shouldn't be. It can't be.
And you need a little bit sinking, more defensive support.
It's sinking your team. We've brought up the power play as well and the penalty kill, but you've brought up too, like on the penalty kill, your goaltender has to be good.
Your goaltender has to be not just good, the best defender.
And it's just, we've all gone through the stats. I mean, even their goal differential is not bottom of the East. It's not. May not be, you know, one of the top three teams, but it's not bottom.
Ready? It's better than the team holding wild card two.
Montreal. -26 for them, -26 for the
Sabres. It's better than all but the Rangers and the Blue Jackets.
Yeah. In terms of goals scored, no one in the wild card race or below is better than you. Nobody.
As a matter of fact, you're better than one of the teams solely in a playoff position in the New Jersey Devils.
Mm-hmm.
It's so disgusting.
This thing too, we brought up the idea of how do you get the fan base engaged, Mitch Marner. Right, like that became the.
That's
big
how
thing.
You get the fan base engaged.
Yeah,
what you still absolutely cannot do is, you cannot run it back, because this season has shown that that's a bad idea.
That's a terrible idea. But I mean, like the Mitch Marner thing, where it's like, that'd be fun. But we're still having these same conversations. They're scoring a ton of goals. Mitch Marner all of a sudden is going to improve the defense. Like you brought up, he's not a defenseman. He's not. He's a forward. So all of a sudden it'd be, you sign Mitch Marner, you still have to make moves in the top four of your defensive pairing. You still need to give Owen Power a solid line mate. You still have to do that. You still have to do something in net. And that's where I was so gung-ho on that idea last week. I don't want to say I'm less so now. I don't know. It's like the third biggest need for them.
And that's the
thing. It'd be flashy. It'd be fun. It's not dire.
It's not their biggest need, because the first two needs are rework your top four and mm-hmm. add someone in there, and make sure you don't go into the next season with the same goaltender plan.
Yeah. It's a lot like the wide receiver conversation
and then
with the Bills.
Number three is, by the way, it'd be nice if you added another top six forward.
Yeah. It's the wide receiver conversation with the Bills. If Luther Burden or Matthew Golden are available at 30, yeah, it'd be really cool. Be awesome. You're probably sitting there going, all right, Allen's back to 4,000 yards, likely, depending if those two hit.
That said,
but
in order to gain a top four defenseman,
mm-hmm.
you may have to pay the price of a top six forward, depending on quality of defenseman.
Right.
So what does that mean? Well, then that's how you get Mitch Marner,
mm-hmm.
is you have to make room, quote unquote. And how do you make room? Well, getting a top four defenseman to help out your defensive core sure would help.
Yeah, sure would help. It would do it.
You'd get a steady partner, say for Dahlin or Power, a person who can play every role, and that's not going to come cheap.
And that's what worries me.
That's where it's like, as a person who is a fan of J.J. Paterka in a Buffalo Sabres uniform, that kind of worries me. Of you probably have to get rid of a caliber like him in order to get a caliber of defenseman that I'm describing.
Well, I more mean that worries me in the sense of I just don't, based off the history of the Buffalo Sabres, I don't see them spending big in free agency. I don't see them being very active in trade deadlines. I just
and
don't
if that's
see
the case,
that.
Then you are looking mm-hmm. at the general manager still needs to be fired.
Yeah.
He has a chance to save himself. That's really the thing. This mm-hmm. is not about fire Kevin Adams. This is, you have an opportunity to save it. Not everything is garbage about this team, even though they're last place in the East. Not everything's terrible.
No.
Somehow, I can say that and not be lying to you or myself.
Mm-hmm.
What I do have to say is you do have to make moves this time and show people that you've learned your lesson from two off seasons ago where you did not strike when the iron was hot. You now need to, because the quality of the roster demands it, make these moves. The quality of the roster demands it, and you are in year six of your tenure.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I look at a team like Detroit, and if they go another season of just being mid-personified and miss the playoffs, Detroit's got to be having conversations about Steve Yzerman at this point.
You don't believe in the Yzer plan?
I know
what plan. It's not Tampa.
It's not even it's not Tampa. You keep doing a bunch of, eh?
Kind of what it is.
And now the Sabres, it's the same thing. Of you're heading into year six, and what do we have to show for it? It is not about the playoff drought. It is about your tenure.
Yeah.
And you need to prove it. And, yes, there are, of course, going to be questions of if Terry ever has, you know, the fortitude to actually make the move, pull the trigger, and get rid of him.
That's a big part of it for me.
That's not the issue here.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it is about Adams protecting what Adams' tenure can be. He can save it. There is something salvageable here. But you cannot sit on your hands one more time as you're fearing. If the fears become reality, the criticism gets louder.
Mm-hmm.
And it should. If he wants to save this and save his tenure as a general manager in hockey, instead of being just called the guy, fair or unfairly, instead of just being called the guy who was elevated because it's not the right thing. I do want to make sure I say it. But the notion becomes, it's just a yes man for Terry.
Right.
That's why he has this job. You have a chance to make sure that that criticism never comes to light as the reason that you're truly there.
803-0550, the number to call. Thoughts on the Sabres? They did split the weekend series. Both exciting games. Scored a lot. Gave up a lot of goals.
The last three, yeah. Last three have been kind of on drugs.
We did also, in a win, still get an Ovechkin goal. He is now four away from tying Wayne Gretzky, five from taking it. They have nine games to play.
That's a best of both worlds scenario.
Yes, it is.
And he just has to keep scoring at an every other game clip right now to keep it going.
Do you think he gets it?
No. I think he doesn't.
You said no.
I think that he doesn't. And that is going to force an interesting decision of he's not a guarantee to be an NHL player next year regardless.
I think he is. How many goals does he have this year?
He's got 37 goals
yeah.
this year.
No. I feel like at a certain point you're like,
I'm talking about his passion.
Oh.
Oh. I thought you were talking about the skill and ability. I was going
to
say.
He wants to go and play at home at some point before it's all done.
But with the way he's playing right now, he's got, I think in the KHL, he'll have at least five more years left. Like the way he's playing right now.
Yes, but he also.
How long do you want to wait for that, though?
Exactly.
Sure.
That's where the passion comes in.
Do I need to really come back in for another entire season just to play one or two games to break this record?
I think he does it. Think about how the season's going. If they were like a tank team.
Now, how controversial would it be if he doesn't get it and then does not return?
See, I already think the NHL's like kind of like sweating this out. Yeah. Like they want they need this has been the storyline all year. You never really want these records to be broken.
I don't think
to
it would
start
happen.
A year.
Like I know what I'm saying, I'm not predicting to happen. But it is something that is worth speculating because I mean the guy wants to play at home.
Mm-hmm.
And you think at some point like it's going to end.
Yeah, eventually that comes calling.
I
think he gets it.
I don't know if he gets it this year.
I think he gets it. I think they are going to push hard. It's 5 goals to get it. They've got 9 games, and they're in a really good spot playoff-wise.
You also forget that hockey has a lot of randomness to it.
It does. Don't disagree with that at all.
And you're on a strict timeline now. You need to score every other game. At slightly higher than that.
Slightly actually. Higher, yeah.
But you need to score in 5 of the next 9. Even for someone like Alex Ovechkin, that's not easy.
No, it's not. He's been at a very good pace up to this point. He has been.
It's not easy.
No.
Even for him.
I just, a part of me is like, they're going to force the issue. They are going to get this
They're
done.
Safely in a playoff spot, but also, they've lost 3 straight. And they want to make sure that they keep their stranglehold on first place. It is a stranglehold right now.
It is, yep.
They're 9 points clear of anyone else, but they're sliding.
But, well, that's the thing. In 9 games, you can absolutely lose that first place lead.
Yeah.
And they're already, I think, analytically, not the most loved team in terms of, like, oh, they're going to walk to the Eastern Conference Final.
Right.
They look like a team that you could struggle against a bad wildcard team.
Matter of fact, say Ovechkin doesn't get the goals record here, gets injured in the playoffs, God forbid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like there's an interesting question to be had about the future of Alex Ovechkin and actually if he breaks the goal record.
I wonder too.
I said, I'm talking out of the side of my face right now about this. I know it's not very realistic what I'm saying. It's just interesting to think about.
I also we don't know the inner workings of the locker room. How much do you think a lot of these guys like it would deflate them if he doesn't get it going into the playoffs? No, of course you want to win a cup. That's first. But this is a career achievement
but on the
to
way
pass
here,
the great one.
To and say that I was here for it.
Yes. I imagine some of these guys are like, I would love to assist.
On the final.
On the final one for a record that for a long time was perceived as unbreakable.
As one of the unbreakables, yeah.
I got to imagine they'd be a little deflating. I think that's got to be something, too, if you're the team of, like, we need to get that going into the playoffs. Like, it's actually good. It's this stretch run rather than him breaking it in February, where now we've got 2 months to kind of wrap this season up. Now it's like, we could do this on the final day of the regular season. You know, that'd be a nice bonus.
Against Pittsburgh.
Stop it!
Yeah, that's their final game. It's on the road, which is the shame in all
that's
of it.
That's better. It's so much better.
But I will say, I would have loved for him to be able to have broken this in front of fans, in front of Washington's faithful.
Mm-hmm.
But that would mean that he has to score 5 in the next 7 games.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
And the tickets kind of show it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look on the secondary market right now for prices for these games, the 2 highest are the last home game against Columbus.
Of course.
Because it might be the last chance you see Ovechkin in the regular season in a Caps uniform.
Mm-hmm.
If he breaks it, for example, he's not going to come back, I don't think.
Okay.
Except for playoffs, obviously. Mm-hmm. But those are, you've got your playoff ticket, you're not giving it up to anyone.
Yeah, right.
And then the other one, which is 165, is in Pittsburgh.
That's so good.
Because you have a chance to legitimately see the last of Alex Ovechkin playing against Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
And B, if Gretzky watches on.
That's so good. 803-0550, the number 2 call. Let's take a call here before we take our next time out. Vince is with us. Vince, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, good. Thanks. Wanted to get your thoughts on this. We all know the Sabres need a shake up. Just wondering if you think Adams would have the guts to do a move of this magnitude, Tage Thompson and Matthias Samuelsson for Travis Konecny and Sanheim.
I feel like Tage is too valuable. That's not.
Yeah, like, that's sort of where I'm. I like the gusto, Vince. I do, because I need anything that that raises the pulse for me with the Sabres. I think he's too valuable. In 2 years, yes, I think there would be something like this. I think you're still in the middle of Tage's prime, and I think there is a feeling probably within the organization because of what they've said of the solutions internal and stuff like that. I think they believe a right turn instead of a left twice.
They're also,
but this is also a bad year in the East, and they still can't do it. So
yeah,
I would not trade Tage.
No.
I will say, though, in maybe a year, maybe two, it's not as crazy of a thought.
I will say, I do like the idea that he brings up of the sum of the trade is better than the parts.
Yep.
But it's, you picked the wrong part. Tage Thompson is not a player that
they love Konechny, though.
Yeah. The thing is, Konechny, the combination of Konechny and Sanheim, it's a good combo coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And the sum is equal than the part, equal to the parts.
Yeah.
And yes, you're getting rid of Samuelson, but you're also, ready? This would have to be indicative of you sign, like, I need the guarantee in blood that you have Mitch Marner ready to sign.
Yeah.
I'm not taking a single chance on that idea unless it's guaranteed in blood that Mitch Marner's a Buffalo Sabre.
That's simply too positive aggressive of an offseason for a Buffalo Sabres team.
But I cannot fathom that a trade like that happens and you don't get a player like that, because I have already said you need to add to the top six.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Thoughts on the Sabres? I kind of like the idea of that trade. I wouldn't do it. I just like that it's being brought up.
It's a fun trade to make in like NHL 25.
Sure, yeah.
But if I actually saw it happen, I would soil my trousers out of frustration.
I don't even know what my reaction would be. Not good, but I don't totally know what my reaction would be. Also want to touch on, again, some of the stuff Sal Capaccio brought up in the first hour. I haven't been able to touch on it. I really do want to get to that franchise tag potentially point for James Cook if we do happen to get there. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones here. We had, Vince, you kind of took our entire break and we just started, I don't want to start say bitching at each other, but we definitely went back and forth about the trade proposal that you had there. For those that might have missed it, it was a bold take. I like it from Vince, actually, because it's the sum of the parts. It's about who's coming back and not who's leaving, but a lot of people can turn it to who was leaving. Vince, a caller, he had said something about Tage Thompson and Matias Samuelson in a trade to Philly for Travis Konechny and Travis Sanheim. And I knew what he was doing. It was about Sanheim. A top six player for Team Canada on the back end. I saw the vision.
I saw the vision.
I saw the vision. It's just that you added the wrong player.
Tage Thompson, that's the one where we're all going, like, that's maybe a bit
much. That's a 40-goal scorer.
Yeah, I mentioned 2 years, different conversation, maybe in a year, maybe different conversation. Yes. Now, no. But you started to mention there in the break as well. It's like, as you mentioned, wrong player, right idea. Jack Quinn gets on a heater. We've bringing up Norris potentially as like a, hey, you
trade. The first rounder is an idea. Because Philly is also probably going to be a team that's looking at reconstruction.
I'm happy to throw the first rounder into any trade. They should not draft any more. You have too many prospects. You need guys now.
Unless you're in the top three.
Correct.
Ready?
That's it.
Anything outside the top three, you trade.
Hang on. I'm going to say something bold here. Even if they win a lottery pick to make it the third overall, trade it.
Because then it becomes more valuable.
I don't care.
It becomes more valuable.
No, ready? I don't care where you're picking. Trade it.
That's Josh. I'm sorry. That's more where I sit.
No,
I hate prospects.
I get
now.
That. I get
feel
that. In this draft, I'm okay with that. Next year, no way.
No,
next year, no way.
Who cares?
Right. No, I get it. I get it. But this draft, I'm one of the only ones I'm okay with.
It's easier to get you there.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because this draft, even the top three is like, they might be top 15 in last year's draft.
Oh, no.
Like the guy that was projected number one overall, Higgins, out of. BU or BC, one of the two Boston colleges, he went from being like, this is the number one guy to, he might be like six.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like Michael.
Trade the pick.
Michael Meese is good. He's going to be probably number two, maybe number one.
Trade next year's first. I don't care.
There's guys up there that'll change your team, But next year, you have Connor Bedard's cousin, Gavin McKenna, who put up 150 points in 50 games in the WHL.
Because why not? If you're bad enough that you're threatening to pick that player, though, next year?
Oh, yeah.
We have bigger problems.
There's bigger problems. But focusing on this year, let's go to Vince's trade proposal here, right? Travis Konecny, Travis Sanheim, I'd love to add them. Also throw in a Cam York, I'd be okay with that too. Throw in Sabres pick, wherever it is. Hopefully it's top 10 because that's more appealing. Then you throw in Josh Norris, prospects, other picks. Just go in at it.
And this
and
does become
dump
more,
off Samuelson as a captain.
Yeah, and this does become more attractive because they did just fire Torts.
Yes.
So there is a feeling of, okay, a rebuild might be on the way. Retool. Maybe not full rebuild, but definitely
know what Breer's vision might be, but he's also seeing a team that is threatening to be last in the Eastern Conference.
To counteract that, too, with Breer specifically, how much time does he have left?
Exactly. He may be more desperate than Adams.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right.
Or he might be convincing management, I need a hard reset. I still have to clean up the mess that you left me with Chuck Fletcher.
That was quite the mess.
I miss him dearly.
Trading a first for Rasmus Ristolainen, baby. Let's go. And then signing him to a 5x5.
Hear me out. You trade that first round draft pick back to them as part of the deal.
There we go.
For Travis Sanheim. Hey, Isak Rosanne, get ready to speak Philadelphia.
Get ready to speak Philadelphia.
Not actually. I do like Rosanne as a player.
But I think it'd be some nice of these prospects, though, they're going to have to start moving them out. You've got to get NHL players, and they have a need in defense.
Like I said, Vince, I saw the vision, and I like it. It was bold.
We'll keep this conversation
but
going
I saw the vision.
The year. We'll keep this going throughout the offseason and into the playoffs and such. I did want to get
Vince,
to...
Vince, if you're hearing, I see the vision.
I did want to get to that James Cook stuff that Sal brought up, because... I've kind of gotten to this point, I've written off the franchise tag for a Bean McDermott management. That duo has never used it. The last time the Bills have used the franchise tag was 2016. We're also at a point in the NFL, a lot of teams really do not use it. They get it done or they kind of battle it out. Cincinnati is the only team I've seen in recent years that seems to be in love with the idea of using it.
Yeah,
because they don't like paying people.
I like to think of the franchise tag not just as a franchise tag and you play on it for the year. It's an extension to extension talks.
That's also right, because the last time
you
the Bills did use it.
Keep a player on the roster, and then you use it to actually get the extension done.
The last time the Bills used it, 2016, Cordy Glenn, was exactly that. They end up signing a five-year extension with him later that offseason. He never plays a game under that tag.
Even what Carolina did. Mm-hmm. Say extension talks are not getting anywhere. And Carolina, with Josh Norman, cuts bait.
Yeah, we're not. You don't really see. I was going to say, outside of quarterbacks,
the franchise
they play
tag,
under the tag typically.
The franchise tag is generally meant to give you the protection of the player being on the roster no matter what for one more year.
Mm-hmm.
But you continue your extension talks anyway. Like
so,
what the Giants end up doing with Saquon Barkley, for example, and it just it's what happened. Speaking of quarterbacks, you know, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
They were threatening with the franchise tag the entire time on that one.
Mm-hmm. And really, for I'd argue, the good teams, it is just giving you a window.
It's giving you a window while giving you the safety of the player will be on the roster next year.
Yeah.
Let's make it longer.
Funny enough, Cordy Glenn, who was an offensive tackle, his tag was $13.7 million. That's right in the ballpark of what James Cook would be. I don't know that exactly, but it's around $13
million. Yes.
But I will tell you, and Sal brought up, that price tag is under what Cook wants.
Right.
But it's we would assume is probably way closer to what the Bills want. Would they be a team if this goes to where it may be heading? Again, nothing confirmed there, but the fact that Bean went from, I don't know, could get done next week to a month later going, I don't know, could get done sometime this year, points to they're not close. I mean, I think Bean outright said they're not really close to an extension.
And if they're not close, that's what the franchise tag is for a year from now.
Yeah.
That's the other part. We have an entire season to play. Could he end up playing better or worse? Guess what? If it's better and you want to try to keep him around, we're going to need to slap that franchise tag if we want to keep him. And the discussions are, they're getting closer, but we're not done yet. This is how you go ahead and, like, you go to your college professor and say, I was sick. Here's the documentation that you need.
I was sick.
And then you go to the doctor and go, I need you to write me up a note.
It's just
smashed my hip on a counter or something.
I like this conversation because Sal also brought up too, and I bring this point up a lot with callers, and it's brought up with really everybody. They have not been in this position. This specific position at running back, they have never had to have a tough conversation of, like you brought up the value. Can we afford Cook? I think Sal's right. They want to bring back basically everybody. They are one of the leaders in draft, develop, resign.
Mm-hmm.
They showed it this year. But do they have the capital to do it? And also, does he just value himself out? Tremaine Edmonds did that. Gabe Davis did that.
And this is something that I brought up with Sal in the first hour. It's not about value to me more than it is about affordability, which value has its place in the discussion. But do the Bills see James Cook's value rising to a point where they know they cannot work the books to keep him?
Yeah.
You have a certain price point that you're able to afford, and you might be knowing that Cook is going to ascend past that, especially with his demands starting where they are. And you say you play the entire season. Well, does he price himself out? Because it was interesting. Tremaine Edmonds' last season here in Buffalo, he started looking a little bit more complete of a player. And I remember saying, I'm going to miss him when he's not here. Like, he's as good as gone
because
he's actually earning himself an interesting payday considering his age going into free agency and the fact that this is actually his best year as a Bill, his last year. So I kind of got very quickly into, he is not going to be here next year.
Yeah, that I do remember his
Terrell Bernard immediately really made me eat my words about saying I might miss Edmonds when he's gone. Talk about all sorts of insurance right there. But the same thing could happen here with Cook. You play the season out, you watch, and if he's playing as well as he did last year, for example, with the amount of big runs that he's breaking, the fact that he was well above his average in touchdowns.
Well, that's the thing, too. They started to use him 10 yards in, where before that was, Josh Allen. That was it. He had, of course, the big plays as well, but his iconic play of this year is a fourth and goal play.
Fourth and goal with effectively your season on the line.
Yeah.
At that moment.
So you're in a tough situation.
And you
don't know where the running back market is going. The thing I look at too, if we're just going to use baseline $13 million a year, I don't know what the franchise tag is, but baseline $13 million, that would make him the fifth highest paid running back per year.
And the thing is that if this season has to play out, I would be ready to start saying, if he's playing well, I'm going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to play yourself out of Buffalo's price point, and that's fine. It's not something that, like, yet you spite a player for trying to maximize his contractual value at that point. It is, I know this team can't afford you the way that you're playing.
Also, fourth. I think I said fifth. It'd make him the fourth highest.
Yeah. And is James Cook playing in a level that deserves the fourth highest paid running back in the NFL? I don't know. If next season happens and he puts up another good year, though, you might look at it. And be considering of that notion, but also realizing if he plays like that, his value goes up.
This is one of the contract negotiations I'd love to be a fly on the wall because we talked about it last week with callers as well. Then you're all of a sudden getting into that, 44% offensive snap rate? And it's like, well, is that less wear and tear? Or is the team telling him, we don't value as highly as you're saying? Again, and also, this is a point too I've heard a few callers bring up. I don't know if necessarily any of us have brought up enough, but the $15 million is just a starting point. And it's also the last number we've heard.
Yes. We have not heard anything different.
So, and that's where we're all going. There's a likelihood that that's just the starting number for Cook, that ultimately it's like we're going to go a little high so that we end – well, maybe the fifth highest paid running back, fourth highest paid running back, around $13 million.
And the thing is now for the Bills, do you have the roster construction capable of having one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league and one of the highest paid running backs?
Go back to that Joe Shane clip, which has been infamous for him, but I think ultimately was kind of right. Mm-hmm. I'm not paying a quarterback a ton of money to hand off to a running back who's making a ton of money.
Yeah. And ultimately, that is what the league looks at running backs as.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it is what it is nowadays.
Mm-hmm. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. segment here. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Charlie, you're on air. We do got to be a little quick, though.
All right, guys. I just wanted to talk to your audience. I remember when Daryl DeMonaco was with the Bills before he went to the Raiders. And one of the things, and I've been with the Bills since 1962, the Bills just don't want to pay the money to win a Super Bowl. We've got one of the top, very top runners. We're scribbling over a couple million dollars because we can't afford it. We'll never win a Super Bowl with this kind of attitude. You got to spend the money. That's all I wanted to say, guys. Pay this man his contract. He's produced for two great years. He's got a whole career in front of us, and I want to win the Super Bowl. We can't win it being cheap. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
They're not being cheap.
So they didn't give out any extensions in Charlie's eyes. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Whatever.
They didn't spend
a ton of money for Von Miller, which if it worked, no one would complain. Yeah, I get
they're
it.
Not, they're not cheap at all.
Charlie's right. They didn't give out any extensions. They're cheap. I get it. It's fine.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
Really?
That was interesting.
And he didn't have two great years. They were good years.
And ready?
They were solid.
Ready? Even if they were great years, if you can't afford a player, you can't afford a player. You think that Kansas City is complaining about the fact that players ending on other teams because of the Super Bowl tax, quote unquote? If you can't afford a player, sometimes that's just the nature of the beast. And they have been spending their money. Like I said, four of the five players that are up for extension that you would have looked at to be re-signed have re-signed on team-friendly deals, by the way. So if you want to talk about being cheap, the players technically have been. So
yeah, like if you really want to complain about that, like, the players should have taken more money.
Yeah,
then.
The players are actually...
Sal made a good point. Christian Benford's not the 13th best cornerback in the league. I don't think anyone would say he's that low.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
They're not the Cincinnati Bengals where you're constantly like, oh, cool, all of our great talent's just going
to
leave.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. Yeah, no.
Well, that's not how I want to end. Now I'm frustrated.
It's not about being cheap. And let me try to at least make you feel better. It is still an ongoing negotiation. Like you said, Zach, we don't know what is going on with talks. And as a matter of fact, there's an entire season to play out before things actually get critical in the status of James Cook in the first place. It's okay to let things ride. Do we have to speculate? Yes, I kind of do have to, I hate this part of the job where we do have to speculate. But at the same time, we know this. He is a Buffalo Bill next year. Maximize that enjoyment. Because if he does end up pricing himself out of the Bills' future plans, that means that this will have been a good season.
Yeah.
Whatever you do from there, try to take advantage of it. Because as Sal said at the start of the show, they have an opportunity. And they know it. In the next 5 years, win the damn thing.
Yep. That's going to do it for me and Derek. We'll touch base with Sal again as voting goes down, namely on stuff like the tush push. But coming up next, after a quick timeout, Sabres split their weekend. And Sabres Live will have you covered on that. This is WGR.